Hello and welcome everyone joining today's 2026 U.S. Olympic team announcement. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. In the interest of time, we ask that you limit yourself to one question. To register to ask a question at any time, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. Please note this call is being recorded. We are standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the meeting over to John Mason with the USOPC. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Nikki. Good morning, everyone. It's great to have you all here, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today as we celebrate the naming of the 232 athletes who will make up the 2026 U.S. Olympic team for Milano Cortina that we released just a little earlier this morning. This is one of the really important milestones on the road to the start of the Games with the opening ceremony on February 6th, now just right around the corner. Today's call will be an opportunity to hear directly from Team USA leadership and athletes as final preparations take place ahead of the start of the Games. Joining us on the call today will be Rocky Harris, USOPC Chief of Sport and Athlete Services, and also Chef de Mission for Team USA at the Milano Cortina Games. Erin Jackson, speed skater, Olympic champion, set to make her third Olympic Games appearance. Brady Tkachuk, U.S. men's national team hockey player and captain of the Ottawa Senators. And Michaela Schifrin, two-time Olympic champion and silver medalist alpine skier, making her fourth Games appearance, also fresh off a 108th World Cup victory and ninth Slalom Globe award over this past weekend. Before we begin, just a quick overview of how this call is going to run. We'll hear from each speaker in the following order. We have roughly 10 minutes with each, so we're going to have to move pretty quick. But we'll start with Rocky, then we'll go to Erin, then Brady, then Michaela. Each speaker will give brief opening remarks, and then we'll open this line to questions. As a reminder, the operator will prompt you when you can queue up for questions, and then we will call on you. Do us a favor, please state your name and affiliation. Given the relatively short amount of time we have, we're going to ask that you ask one question. If you have a follow-up, then rejoin the queue, and we'll get to you as time allows. With that, let's get started. I'll turn the line over to Rocky Harris. Rocky, go ahead.
Thanks, John, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. I'm thrilled to be here to celebrate the announcement of the 2026 U.S. Olympic Winter Games team. Making the team is an unbelievable accomplishment. Whether it's accumulating enough points over a season, winning a trials event, finding camaraderie within a team setting, the pathway to making Team USA takes commitment and perseverance, and that doesn't fully take into account the incredible journey each athlete takes to prepare for this moment. In most cases, it starts at a very young age, dedicating years and countless hours to reach the ultimate goal of representing Team USA at the Olympics. We never take this for granted. You will meet three athletes, as John mentioned, Erin, Brady, and Michaela, who exemplify this drive. I'm grateful they're able to join us today, and I'm proud that they are members of Team USA. They are incredible athletes and representatives of their sport, their national governing body, and this 2026 Olympic team. We have a lot of confidence in the 2026 team because our winter sport programs have made significant progress over this quad. We've made an intentional effort to focus on winter sport. In partnership with our national governing bodies, we developed a winter high sport high performance strategic plan that we've been executing off of the last 4 years. We've invested significant resources into winter sport thanks to the generosity of our foundation donors, which has allowed us to invest in coaching, athlete stipends, technology, equipment, access to snow and ice, and so much more. That's one of the reasons why we're so confident in this 2026 team. I know the release has a lot of details, but I do want to share a few of the highlights. The 2026 team, as John mentioned, features 232 athletes. And as it stands right now, that 232 number gives this team the opportunity to surpass the 2018 team for the most Team USA athletes who've ever competed in the Winter Games. So this should end up being the biggest team we've ever brought to the Winter Games. Within that 232 are some truly global stars, returning medal winners and others who head into the Games with big expectations for themselves. We have 99 returning Olympians, including 7 four-time Olympians, 10 three-time Olympians, and 23 two-time Olympians. In that group are 33 Olympic medalists, including 18 Olympic champions who won a combined 22 gold medals. Three have won multiple Olympic gold medals, and 16 athletes have won multiple Olympic medals. We also know there are so many athletes who are capable of surpassing all expectations, capable of reaching a personal best when it matters most. And that is extremely exciting for me, for my team, the national governing bodies, and for everyone who follows Team USA. Speaking of the national governing bodies, they have been true partners in the effort to prepare for these games. Our collaboration is critical, and I can't say enough about the CEOs and staff who have given so much to this Team USA effort. I can go on about how excited I am personally for this team and our prospects, but I want to take a moment before questions to speak about the positive experience we've had with the people of Milan Cortina 2026. It's no secret they are working overtime right now to welcome the athletes, the full delegations, and the fans. It's a huge and very complicated process, and we are extremely grateful. The communication from the OCOG to us, to the international federations, and our national governing bodies has been very good. That goes a long way. We have confidence in the organizing committee, the world-class venues, and the people of Italy to deliver an unbelievable games. The athletes are excited to get there and start competing. So with that, I think we can take a few questions before Aaron joins us. Thank you so much. John, I'm ready for the first question.
Nikki, will you open the line to questions, please?
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your telephone keypad. To leave the queue at any time, press star two. And again, in the interest of time, we ask that you limit yourself to one question. We'll take our first question from Lisa Roche with Deseret News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Rocky, I'm hoping you can talk about the importance of Utah in terms of preparing Team USA for winter games. I know Utah doesn't have the most athletes going from the state, but we are a winter training center. Please talk about the importance of Utah in getting these athletes ready to win in Milan Cortina. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And yes, Utah has been a strategic priority for us, for Team USA, for decades. And we have many of our national governing bodies that are based there, hundreds of athletes that train there every year. And it's a place where we really believe that has the intentions of growing winter sport, not only in their state, not only in our country, but across the world. And while it's a training ground and where we are very proud is the youth and grassroots programs they've built there to build the future pipeline to Team USA. And it really gives currently competing and future athletes with the home games there in 2034 an opportunity to dream big and think about competing at a home game. So we see Utah as a critical state for the future of Team USA and actually for the team that's competing right now. So thank you for the question, and we really appreciate the support that state has given us for many years.
Thank you. And once again, that is star and one on your telephone keypad if you would like to join the queue. We will move next with Rich Perelman with the Sports Examiner. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, Rocky. Could you give an update on the KDU Lander situation?
Yes, Rich. Thanks for reaching out, and appreciate all the work you do. I follow your news report whenever it comes out, so thanks so much for your coverage. So we did send a letter to the IOC, and we got a response this morning that they are supporting the International Federation's decision on the matter, since it was an International Federation's decision. And so for us, I'm going to talk to Katie later today and see how she wants to move forward. But we did get a response from them. Thanks for asking, Rich.
Thank you. We will move next with Tim Reynolds with the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Good morning. To follow up on the Katie question, is the thought behind it to add a 26th to the women's skeleton field, or would she have to, if she is successful in this, would she be taking one of the two allocated spots to one of the two spots that were allocated to the U.S.?
Yeah, so we were requesting an additional slot for the sport to allocate to Katie, so it would not have taken away from one of our currently competing athletes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we show no further questions in queue at this time.
Great. Thanks, Nikki. Thank you so much for the time this morning, Rocky. Appreciate it. As always, if anybody has other questions for Rocky, they can certainly come to the USOPC comms team and we can get you answers or make the right connections there. Now it's just a really great honor to introduce Olympian Aaron Jackson to the call. Like I said earlier, it's a fairly complex process because people are dialing in from all over the world, but we're thrilled to have Aaron this morning, who is, as I mentioned, now making her third Olympic team. So, Aaron, welcome to the call. If you'd like to say a few words about expectations and experience with Team USA and looking forward, and then we'll open the line to questions after that.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess just to start, can I make sure, can everyone hear me?
We sure can.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me. I am in Salzburg, Austria today. We just finished up our fifth World Cup in Insel, Germany, just across the border. So we're taking a little fun trip out to enjoy the city today. And yeah, I'm just super excited. We head to Milan on Thursday this week, and then we get to get on the ice on Saturday. So everything's moving really quickly. But yeah, this will be my third Olympic Games. My first one was just kind of a whirlwind of an experience. And then my second one, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to win the gold. So this time around, I'll be defending my gold medal in the 500. And then I'll have another opportunity in the 1,000 meters. So I've been working really hard at that one. And we'll see how that goes as well. But yeah, super excited. Been training really hard, battling a few injuries, but everything's been looking pretty good. Yeah, I think that's it, I guess, if there are any questions.
Thank you. And as a reminder, that is star and one if you would like to join the queue. Again, in the interest of time, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question. We'll take our next question from Sean Gregory with Time Magazine. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Aaron. I know, you know, the 500, you're defending your gold, you've set up more of your own race, but I'm just interested in one of your opponents that seems to be threatening Femke Kok from the Netherlands. What makes her a challenge? What does she do well? And, you know, kind of how do you beat her, knowing, again, that you have to kind of run your own race?
Yeah, I think with speed skating, it's just a very unique sport where it's all about, like, what you can do personally. It's not like a sport where there are tactics involved and you have to figure out what the other person is doing. So it's more about focusing on my personal race, my personal performance. And there's nothing that I can really do about, I guess, someone else's style or their, I don't know, I guess, like, how they've been performing. So, yeah, each time I go out there, I'm just trying to do my personal best and reach and just hit all of my cues that I've been working on. So, yeah, I guess one thing that sets her apart is that she's just been performing really well, and I think she's just a very technically strong athlete. She's been up and coming for a few years now. And, yeah, I'll be coming at it from a sort of different angle. I had a bit later start to the season with a few injuries, and then I had another injury mid-season. So I think my performance will definitely be a bit of a surprise just to see, like, how I come out at the games. But I'm feeling super confident. I know that when it's game time that I can always kind of show up. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And then as far as the 1,000-meter, that's been a very new event for me on the world stage. And I just got fifth in that a couple days ago here at our World Cup. So that one's also looking pretty promising for me. So, yeah, I'm just really excited to get out there and show what I can do.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Julie Jack with the Salt Lake Tribune. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. And hi, Aaron. Great to hear your voice again. Appreciate taking questions. Mine is just that with the way that the U.S. has been performing lately, I've heard just some people kind of maybe joking or maybe not so much saying that they may be the new Netherlands. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about whether you think that that is possible and what it would take to kind of upend the Netherlands as the dominant country in long track speed skating.
Yeah, it's really exciting, the team that we have this year. We have a really strong team in almost every distance. Kind of leading the charge there is Jordan Stoltz on the men's side. If everything goes as it seems it will, then he should be leaving with 3 Olympic gold medals. So that right there is, enough to put a really big dent in the Dutch contingency. But, so Jordan leading the charge on the men's side, and we also have on the men's sprint side. And then on the long distance side, we also have Casey Dawson, who won a few medals this season in the long distance races. So he's also a really big contender. And then on the women's side, Brittany Bowe has been really strong this season. She's on the podium a couple times and finished the season overall on the podium. So she's looking really great. And we have Mia Manganello in the mass start, who won the overall ranking for the World Cup. So it's just, yeah, right and left. We have just so many people who are able to get on the podium for this game. So I don't know. I'm really excited for all my teammates, and I think it's going to be a really good one.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nick Hope with OIS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there, Brittany. Mentioning Brittany Bowe there. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship, obviously the amazing story 4 years ago, but the relationship on and off the ice, and then what it's like racing together in the 1,000 meters now you've added that?
So I've known Brittany for over 20 years now. We started with the same inline speed skating team back in Florida, and yeah, now we're racing on the same team again, ice skating in Salt Lake City. And it's just been amazing to kind of have her as a friend and mentor all throughout the years and just being able to look up to her and learn from her. And this will be her last game. She's retiring after this. But yeah, it's also really fun being able to race together in the 1,000 now because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the 1,000 is a bit of a newer thing for me at this level. And we went 4th and 5th together at this past World Cup, which is really awesome. So I think it would be the greatest thing in the world for us to share the podium at the game. So that's definitely what we're aiming for here. And it's just always fun to be able to share moments like that with a teammate.
Thank you. We will move next with Lois Elsman with Amsterdam News. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Question, how do you feel you've evolved as a competitor over these 4 years with increased expectations because you are the reigning Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, I would say a lot has changed over the years. I think especially getting older, in my field, like I'm the oldest person. Everyone else is, you know, in their mid-20s, and I'm 33 now. So things have definitely been a lot different as far as training and preparation and all that. And I mentioned getting a bit of a later start to this season. I have 3 disc herniations in my lower back, so that really changes how I can train and how I can prepare. But I've been really fortunate to have amazing coaching staff and medical staff to help me kind of modify things along the way. So, yeah, this summer was a lot of aqua jogging and elliptical and stuff like that and a lot less running and those other, like, high-impact activities to try to protect my back. I'm still feeling super confident. Just excited to give it another go.
Thank you. We will move next with Jill Jarax with Keep the Flame Alive. Please go ahead.
Hi, Erin. You've been competing with crowds for a few years now, but Milan Cortina is going to be the last big event to come back from COVID. So having experienced an Olympics with fans and without fans, what do you anticipate the vibe to be in Milan, and how does that affect you when you're racing?
Good question. I would say I'm a little bit different in that regard. I don't really get nervous too much. It's more like having a crowd will excite me to try to, like, push me to that next level, because I think my issue is more that I'm a little bit too calm going into events most of the time. And, with the Olympics, there's going to be a lot of pressure, which I love. And I think that's really gonna help me out. And then as far as the crowd, I feel like it's going to bring a lot of fun, a lot of energy. It'll be just really awesome to be able to, you know, hopefully be able to look up and see my family in the crowd and my family and friends. And then also for my teammates, because for some of them, this will either be their first Olympics or Beijing was their first Olympics. So I think it'll be really cool for them to experience just the energy of an open games. And it'll be really cool to see their reactions too.
Thank you. And that's all the time we have for Erin at this time.
Cool. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Erin. Really appreciate your time today. I know you are super busy in the run-up and also calling from a much different time zone, so we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Next up, I'm really, really pleased to – thanks, Erin. I'm thrilled to welcome in Brady Tkachuk from the U.S. Men's National Hockey Team, previously member of the U.S. Foreign Nations Team. Brady, thanks for joining us. We're thrilled to have you. We'd love to hear a little bit about your excitement for the games and what your expectations are for being a part of this team that competes in Milan in just a few weeks.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for having me. I can't believe it's, throughout this whole year, you're like, oh, February, you know, the Olympics are kind of going to be a long ways away. But now that we're, a week away, week and a half, 2 weeks, it's starting to get really exciting. I know back here for the NHL season, we have a couple more games to get through. So that's kind of still the focus right now. But it's hard not to get excited to go compete with the best players in this country and see some of the best athletes in the world go head to head and compete for the gold medal.
Thank you. And for questions, that is star and one on your keypad if you would like to join the queue. And again, in the interest of time, we ask that you please limit your question to one at a time. We'll take our next question from Stephen Wino with the Associated Press. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. Brady, I know you played with Matthew at the Four Nations last year. What just does it mean for you guys to be able to, as brothers, play together at the Olympics? I know you, Jack and Quinn get the same chance. What does that mean to you? Obviously, it's something you've been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, it's I never really expected it to be a dream come true. You know, of course, that's always something that you've wanted to do is play at any level with your brother and create memories that way. But the fact that we're going to be able to do it on the top level at the Olympics and both being, Olympians, it's more than a dream. It's just can't believe that it's soon to be real life. And I think it's just all the credit goes to, our parents and my sister all of our family and friends, coaches that helped us both get to where we're at. It's not a one man show to become an Olympian. It takes a whole village. For us, we're very lucky to have each other to push each other every day throughout the year and throughout the years. We're very lucky to have each other and our whole entire family as well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sean Gregory with Time Magazine. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, Brady. Matthew just coming back. I'm just curious. I know you've got your own hockey to take care of, but have you got to check out any of his games? How did he look? How confident are you that, he's going to be the Matthew Tkachuk that we all know?
The first game he came back, I watched a little bit of that. Then the last two that he played, we were playing, so I couldn't watch him. So, I have no doubts about him, and I don't think anybody should have any doubts about him because the way he plays, those big moments, he always shows up and I just know how much work he put in, how much he was, able to sacrifice and to get to that next level after he's already achieved the pinnacle of our sport and winning back-to-back Stanley Cups and how he just wants more. So, I wouldn't be worried about, his on-ice performance because I know wholeheartedly he's going to give everything that he has and he's going to show up in a big moment for us.
Thank you. We will move next with Nick Hope with Olympic Information Services. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks so much, and hi, Brady. Obviously, you mentioned there about it being a family affair. Tell us a little bit about the importance of your dad during your career and having grown up, I guess, in a house where there is an Olympic medal, what that kind of history and the significance is of the Olympic Games and going there yourself to try and emulate that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, he's been very influential for us, you know, growing up, and, you know, him winning a silver medal in 02 at Salt Lake City was, you know, of course, not the medal that he wanted, but to still bring home a medal to show, you know, his hard work. And I remember just a funny story. I brought, I think it was second grade, I brought the silver medal into a show and tell, and I had no idea what the significance of it was, but all my classmates loved it and thought it was the coolest thing ever. So I realized that what I brought in was pretty cool. But no, for us, no, being our first Olympics and my dad playing in four, that you know, he hasn't really given us much advice of, you know, certain things to expect. I think he just wants us to go in open mind and have our experiences be our own and just take it all in and enjoy every second that, you know, the Olympic Village, the little things of just, you know, being at the rink with your teammates and stuff like that. So just taking that all in and enjoying every second we possibly can.
Thank you. And once again, that is star and one for your questions. We will move next with Lisa Roche with Deseret News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Brady, I'm not sure this is as much for you as it would have been for Aaron, but I'm wondering about the importance of a place like Utah for winter athletes. We have an NHL team here now that we're really proud of, the Mammoths. How do you see that influencing hockey and the Olympic performance in hockey going forward, having that NHL team here?
Yeah, I mean, I always loved, you know, the last 2 years. I've never been to Salt Lake City before and even Utah itself. So for me, it was a new experience. It was a beautiful place. I've really enjoyed the short time that, you know, I've stayed there. I think, you know, hockey's just going to, you know, blow up in that area and be even bigger than it was before. I know just from my experience, I've only played in Utah twice, but just the energy and how into it the crowd was and how awesome of an atmosphere it was pretty special. And not every team has that type of energy. So, you know, expect things just to continue to grow and build into an even better, you know, hockey city.
Thank you. We will move next with Julie Jack with the Salt Lake Tribune. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks so much. It's kind of continuing actually off of Lisa's question, but I understand you have a little bit of a childhood history with Clayton Keller, and obviously he's the Mammoth U.S. Team USA representative. Can you tell me a little bit about what you think he's going to bring to the team and kind of how his personality will fit in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's such a big ad for a team. Just, you know, of course, Matthew and I have our connections with Clayton going back to our youth hockey days in St. Louis, where, you know, we were both teammates with Clayton at some points of our youth hockey. And you already knew at that age he was going to be a really good player. And just, you know, I think for him, it's just the skill set that he brings, you know, the captaincy, the leadership role that he has, it's will help us, but just the way he plays is so special. He can make a play out of nothing and such a gifted playmaker, so skilled and a guy we're really looking forward to you know, being Olympians with and going to battle every single day with.
Thank you. We will move next with Jason Jerwitz with Sports Travel Magazine. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Brady. There's been a lot written about of late about the rush to finish the main hockey venue in Milan. Are you following those developments, and are there any concerns as a player about competing in an arena that hasn't had a lot of testing yet on the ice?
Honestly, I haven't really followed it. I mean, I've seen clips on social media, but at the end of the day, that's stuff that none of us can control. I'm not worried about it. And quite frankly, I'm probably one of the guys that I could really care less about. It's, you know, all that stuff always works itself out, and just whether, you know, ice is good, ice is not good, doesn't really matter. It's just the opportunity to be playing the Olympics and going out there and competing to win the gold medal is kind of really only mine and our team's mindset, that all the little things that we can't control is something that we're not going to worry about. So, but usually always this stuff figures itself out, and probably talked about too much leading into it and creating doubt, where it just always works out.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for Brady. I will now turn the call back to John.
Thanks, Nikki. And thanks, Brady, for the time. We can't wait to watch the team come together. We can't wait to watch you guys compete in just a couple of weeks. We really appreciate your time today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, moving on to our last guest today. We are thrilled to welcome in Michaela Schifrin, two-time Olympic champion and silver medalist alpine skier. This will be Michaela's fourth games. Her first games was in Sochi in 2014. Michaela, are you on the line?
Yeah, I am. Hi, can you hear me?
We can. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd love for you to share a little bit about your experience and expectations being a part of Team USA now for the fourth Olympic Games. And then we'll go to the line for questions after that.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Michaela Schifrin, as you know. Thanks for the intro. And thank you all so much for joining this call and for telling the stories of the athletes of Team USA. I am personally so excited. Of course, I'm excited for Milan Cortina, but I'm particularly excited about the alpine team we're bringing into Cortina this year. On the women's side, we are currently first in the Nations Cup standings for overall, slalom, GS, and downhill. This success that we've had so far in the World Cup season is actually—it's really unprecedented for the U.S. in our sport in alpine racing. So it's been a big season already. We've been in Europe for months, competing every single weekend and often on the weekdays as well. I just skied my 14th World Cup race yesterday in the Czech Republic, and actually secured my ninth slalom crystal globe, which is incredibly exciting to do this early in the season, and especially after the past two seasons with kind of battling a couple different pretty serious injuries. I've had two fairly incomplete seasons, and so to be at this point right now in January heading into the Olympics, but also from the perspective of just having a really successful World Cup season, I'm really excited about that. So yeah, generally it's just a really cool time for alpine ski racing, and our team is bringing big energy into Milan Cortina.
Great. Thank you, Michaela. Operator, we can open up the line and take some questions.
Thank you. And as a reminder, that is star and one for your questions. And again, in the interest of time, we ask that you limit yourself to one question. We will move next with Seth Doan with CBS News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Michaela. Thanks for chatting with us. I'm just curious. You've been at this, as we know, several times. I wonder how different each Olympics feels and what you're feeling inside your brain thinking about this competition. Do you think back to Beijing? What do you want to get out of this? Where's your mind at the moment?
Oh gosh, you know, this is such a good question. I kind of have been asking myself that on a daily basis, to be honest. Every single Olympics I've been to has been just drastically different. I think I've actually been thinking a lot back to Sochi, you know, my first Olympic gold, and being so young, you know, 18 years old going into the Olympics. And I remember so much, you know, so many questions leading up to it. At the time, even though I was quite young, I was already a favorite for a medal in the slalom. And I had won my first slalom globe. It's crazy. That it's just crazy to have nine now. like at the time I won my first Slalom Globe and I was thinking, gosh, you know, the world is my oyster. I'm just so excited to be able to just ski race and, you know, kind of what's the big deal. Since then I've had so many varying experiences at the Olympics. So I'm coming in with, honestly, I would say a really open mind. I think the one thing you can expect from the Olympics is that things are just not really going to go according to your plan. So you've got to roll with the punches and have a really good open mind. And I think you've heard from the other athletes prior to me talking on this call, like it's so important to be able to enjoy whatever moments that you can and stay really solid with the team around you and the village who's really gotten you to this point, and find the peaceful moments and find the joyful moments. And that's something that I've had every single games, including Beijing. You know, the headlines from Beijing were certainly a lot on the performance side, but I had some incredible moments behind the scenes even there. But what I can tell you with absolute certainty is that I'm really excited to compete in this games without COVID tests every 24 hours and, you know, just the pandemic being breathing down our necks. You know, it's a very, very different situation to go into this games, and that's a wonderful thing.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Will Graves with the Associated Press. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, Michaela, thanks for talking to us this morning. I noticed you said over the weekend, you know, I just love skiing. That's the best feeling to be here. And I'm sort of wondering where that love comes from. Is there something about facing the elements on the mountain that you find appealing? Like, is the challenge of taking on nature sort of part of what attracts you to skiing?
Oh, that's such a great question. You know, sometimes I wonder if I knew exactly where the love came from, you know, if maybe some of the magic is in the mystery. There are certain things that I love in life that I just couldn't tell you why exactly. But there is a piece of the sport for me, I think it's like this tangibility in, I don't know, in this process that's actually really uncertain. Like in ski racing, there are so many variables. You've got weather, you've got snow conditions, the course conditions are deteriorating even throughout the course of a race from, you know, bib 1 to bib 7 to bib 18 to bib 50. You have all of these unbelievable variables, you know, travel and having to be flexible in that, and like just it's so hard to explain that even, and you know, many people on this call probably are already aware of that. And feeling like I can ski a run in training and look at the timing sheet and then look at the video and do some analysis and then go up, you know, lap around on the chairlift and ski another run and actually make improvements with my own body and my own mindset and actually, you know, move my muscles in a slightly different way and see that play out in essentially in real time on the timing sheet and in the video analysis again, and using the GPS units that we're starting to use to sort of track progress and force and load and, you know, basically body capacity. And these details, it's like, I don't know, the tangibility of that, it's kind of like doing a puzzle in something that's so uncontrollable with so many variables, to be able to feel like you can actually kind of take control in the way. But as you said, there's also, you know, the place that nature, the role that nature plays is it's actually everything. The mountain, like you see these sort of taglines like skiing is a dance and the mountain always leads. You have to take all of these things into consideration, these variables and the things you're trying to control. And then you have to, you know, basically just go communicate with the mountain and feel like you're using gravity to your advantage and you can't try too hard. You have to try hard enough. It's just this beautiful balance that I find really, I don't know, it just keeps me coming back.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Katie McInerney with Boston Globe. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Michaela. After the Killington crash, you wrote really eloquently about battling PTSD, and I was wondering, what do you think you learned the most about yourself in that process of going through mental health treatment, and where do you feel you're at entering these Olympics?
I think I'm just constantly learning, you know, through the Killington crash, through the recovery of weird puncture wound to the abdomen, which is just not a typical injury that you see in ski racing. I think it even opened my eyes further to how complex humans are and how much we really do put our bodies through in alpine ski racing, that you don't really, you know, when you start in the sport, and especially if you're young, and your body has this great capacity, and you can kind of, like, you can kind of crash, and you can take things, you can kind of take a beating, and you can still get up and kind of walk away, and you don't really need as much physical therapy, and, you know, most of the work that you do is, you know, like a little bit reactive to whatever little minor aches and pains you get, but you don't have to do maybe as much proactive work in those young years. And then you start getting older. It's probably a little bit silly for me to talk about being older at 30, but at the same time, like, my body is maxed out every single day. And, I guess learning about myself and my own mental capacity and my own body capacity and how respectful I have to be of that. It's been an incredible process. It's been like a very painful, literal and metaphorical in all of the different ways. It's been a painful process, even just over the last year. As far as the mental side, this sport just demands so much. And the only way I can really describe it is that last year at this exact time, I was trying to return for the World Championships in Saalbach, Austria. And I was trying to get prepped to race the giant slalom and the slalom for World Championships. And I was training GS, and I could not do it. I could barely even finish a run, not because of crashing, but because when I told my body to go, it just wouldn't. And it's like somehow your body knows when it's too much. And, you know, if you flash forward to now, just this past weekend in Czech Republic, I got my first GS podium, actually in 2 years, because I had the injury last year. I also had an injury the season before. So I'd just worked my way back to the giant slalom podium. And that, it's crazy to look back on the process. And you have to understand, like, everybody needs to understand with these struggles that they don't work linearly. They don't work in the way you think they're going to or expect they're going to. And you got to listen to yourself, and you have to communicate with the people who are around you and helping you. And time helps. Exposure helps. Like, it doesn't work to just back away from your fears, but it works to take them on in kind of bite-sized pieces.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pat Graham with Associated Press. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, Michaela. How are you doing? Thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Pat.
Hey, so I guess what would a young Michaela Schifrin, the one who grew up idolizing Marlee Shields and Bodie Miller, think of winning 9 slalom titles, 108 World Cup races, and 2 Olympic gold medals?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think she'd say it's someone else. You know, it's like, I've always been a generally happy person as a kid. Like, my parents always, you know, describe me as just like a really happy kid. Kind of giggly, pretty goofy, honestly quite awkward. I never felt like I had a lot of self-esteem. You know, I'd walk into a cafeteria, and if I didn't have a friend walking in with me, to be honest, I wouldn't walk in at all. Like, I just never really just stomped into rooms feeling real great about myself and feeling, honestly, like not really feeling a lot of belief in what I could accomplish or what, you know, what the future would look like for myself in sport. And I don't know if that's different. I mean, sometimes it feels a little bit different from the way a lot of athletes talk about their upbringing and talking about, you know, really emphasizing you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself, and you never stop believing even when everyone else doubts you. And I maybe had a little bit of a different path there. I just really, really trusted hard work, and the way my parents brought up both my brother and myself was like, you can be methodical, you can love the process of improving, you can really, really enjoy, you know, doing the drills and the work and the maintenance work and the mental work and watch visualization, all of these things. Like, it's really fun. And so we did that with every sport, with windsurfing and tennis and soccer and of course with skiing. And I just trusted in that process so much that it almost took the necessity to believe or like have full confidence in myself. It kind of took that out of it. So now you flash forward to this period of time. I think if you asked me when I was 12, 13, 14, I would have been like, that's not me. Like, she's someone entirely different. The irony is, I think that mentality is one of the things that's been, you know, that I've learned. Maybe I was partially born with it. Maybe I've definitely learned it along the way. You know, it's just all about the steps you take along the way and those little, just the little things you do on a daily basis. And that's what's gotten me here. You know, not belief in the future, but just so much trusting in what's happening right now.
Thank you. And at this time, we have reached our allotted time for questions. I will now turn the call back to John for closing remarks.
Great. Thank you, Nikki. And thank you so much, Michaela, for joining us. We really appreciate your time. I know you're super busy.
Thank you so much. Thank you all.
Thanks. Okay, well, that's the end of our time today. We are incredibly thankful to Rocky, Aaron, Brady, and Michaela for joining us today, tremendous representatives of Team USA, and we are certainly excited to watch them work in just a couple of weeks. As a note, we will post the recording and transcript of this call in our press room as soon as we receive them. And as a reminder, we are kind of continually updating our games resource page at usopc.org. We encourage you to check that site out for more information that you can use as you cover the team and cover these games. As always, please do not hesitate to reach out if you have any questions or if this communications team can be of help to you. And with that, I think we're going to say farewell, and we look forward to either seeing you on the ground in Italy or hearing from you if we can help you cover these games and this team remotely. So all the best, and go Team USA. Thank you.
Thank you. This brings us to the end of today's meeting. We appreciate your time and participation. You may now disconnect.